On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, we go through the Elite Eight and get down to our final four in the best net of the 2010s bracket. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We got two more matchups in the second round. First up, Joe Johnson, the 3 seed, taking on the 19 seed, Mason Plumlee, who pulled off an upset against Anthony Morrow in the first round. Drexler, does he have the juice against ISO Joe?
He does not.
Yeah.
But before I cast him off, it's Joe Johnson. Like, I think Joe in this bracket has a real chance to make a deep run in the tournament. So he's my sleeper pick to make some knock out some really, really tough opponents as we get down to the nitty gritty.
Josh, you going with ISO Joe also?
Yeah. Pretty clear for me. I think just his overall high production and also for doing it for a very long time for the Nets. So he has both the longevity factor and the actual play factor over Plumlee. So, Mason, I'm sorry, but this ends your run of reverse dunks.
Yeah, Joe made an all-star team. That's kind of all you need to say. Mason Plumlee did not. So we will move on from that pretty quickly to our last round, or our last matchup, excuse me, of the second round. It is Chris Humphries, the 11 seed, against the 6 seed, Caris LeVert. LeVert has been red hot. He's been turning it on of late, right before the season was suspended. Did he do enough in the decade for you to move him on past Chris Humphries, Josh?
Come back to me. I'm still debating.
Drexler, what are you thinking?
I definitely think I don't have to think that much about it or look at Basketball Reference. I think Caris is going to get the nod over Chris Humphries here. But Humphries' tenure with the Nets, he had his best season for almost 14 points, 11 rebounds. Again, very serviceable player, 48% from the field that year. He had another year where he averaged 10 and 10 with 53% shooting. So Humphries had some very solid years with the Nets, but I think Caris has now been here since he drafted 2016. So he's been here for 4 years now, and I think – I made this prediction. I think he's going to be the guy that stays of the whole Spencer, Caris, Jared Allen, who's going to get traded if any of them do. I think Caris LeVert, when it's all said and done, has a chance to go down as the Nets' all-time leading scorer when he retires.
Wow.
Whoa.
I like that take. I guess given his age and like where the ages of like the other guys on the roster who you assume will be around for a while are, that's not like a crazy prediction. Josh, what are your thoughts on that?
The take or the pick?
The take.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's possible in terms of overall tenure, but I'd say like just given Caris' injury concerns, I don't think he'll ever get there, especially as he gets older. And I'm looking now, like this is actually baffling, but Humphries played more games as a Net than LeVert has. 30 more. Or close to 40 more, actually. Which is,
oh, wow, yeah, that is kind of surprising.
Which is really mind-blowing. I think it goes to show that LeVert is just always hurt. And also, coronavirus has taken away the rest of the season for him when he really got going. So I think, yeah, I'll go with LeVert in this one. But I do have to say, from where we are today, based on where he was his rookie season, I think he should be farther along. And a lot of that has come down to injuries. And obviously when he came back last year, besides the playoff series against Philly, he was abysmal and had a lot of games this year where he was really struggling before this most recent stretch of five or so. But he's had a lot of really awful games, and his consistency really needs to improve for him to be kind of someone who's locked in as a guy that's going to be moving forward with KD and Kyrie on this team, because he definitely has the potential and he's shown it in glimpses, but he has not put it together enough for me to kind of put him as a surefire guy, especially over folks like Spencer Dinwiddie and others.
One thing for me that I think Caris has in his that's going good for him is the fact that Kevin Durant and him have been friends for for a while now. And again, one of the main reasons we know Kevin Durant came here is because he wants to play with his friends. He wants a fresh start. He wants to play with these guys like Torian Prince and people that he just enjoys being around. And so I think Karras is going to help his case for the front office to, if they are going to trade Karis LeVert in this summer.
Yeah, I think to Josh's point, we've talked about it. Like, it is all about like consistency, and obviously LeVert's had injuries, but yeah, I kind of want to see more, and that's why it was so just another reason it was so upsetting to see the season suspended when it was, because it did look like LeVert was starting to turn a corner. His jumper has looked a lot better this season, particularly since he came back from that injury. He's 38% from three this season on five attempts per game. Obviously he hasn't played a ton of games, but he's shooting like a decent volume when he does play, and it looks pretty good. He has confidence in it. He's like stepping back and like shooting threes without an assist kind of thing. So definitely was looking forward to seeing him and Dinwiddie like in the playoffs, making that push together as like the co-number ones, and seeing if LeVert could kind of replicate the quality of play that he brought in the Philly series when he kind of was the Nets' best player. So I'm with you, Josh, that LeVert needs to show a little bit more, and I think he had started to do that. Unfortunately, the timing didn't quite work out with the season being suspended, but nevertheless, he will move on past Chris Humphries, and we have an all-chalk Elite Eight here, all the top eight, but now I think is where it'll start to get interesting, because now there's really no easy outs, I would say. I think we can have some real good discussions about some of these matchups.
But first, let me tell you about one of the ultimate life hacks. It's hard to find the time to sit down to read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem. I can't recommend it enough. It is Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique. Works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders or Josh are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you and me who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library. From self-help books to business, health, history books, everything in between, Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had time to. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA to try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial and save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
Let's start with the 1-8, which is maybe the most lopsided, obviously, given the seeding. That's Brook Lopez taking on Bojan Bogdanovic. One of these guys will move on to the Final Four. Drexler, what are your thoughts here?
Who is the matchup again? I'm sorry.
Brook Lopez, the 1 seed, against the 8 seed, Bojan Bogdanovic.
I think this is where Bojan's run comes to an end, going up against Brolo. But again, Bojan, I think he had a good run with Brooklyn. I think he was very underappreciated during his time with the Nets, and the amount of I felt like we always wanted more and more out of Bogdanovic, but when you look back at it, he kind of was arguably the best player on some of those teams that he played with on the Nets. So I appreciate him as a fan.
Yeah, Josh, do you want to eulogize Bogdanovic in this bracket?
I mean, I like Bojan. I think he definitely had finer days ahead of him on other teams like in Indiana and Utah this season. But he was a solid Net, someone that came in and really was able to add some pizzazz to a team that was really kind of primarily veterans and a lot of people lacking passion. He definitely was able to bring that. But Brook Lopez, just kind of the prototype of a great Net, someone that I don't think will really have a tough matchup until he gets to the finals. No spoilers there. So I have to go with Brolo pretty easily in this one.
Yeah, it's Brook. This is probably the one matchup in this Elite Eight that is pretty straightforward. But let's move to one that's maybe a little bit closer. Let's do the 4 versus 5. We have the 4 seed Spencer Dinwiddie taking on the 5 seed Joe Harris. Two guys that are kind of linked together. They came up at similar times for the Nets and have kind of both risen out of nowhere to become just quality contributors. And in Dinwiddie's case, like a borderline all-star. Joe Harris won the 3-point contest at All-Star Weekend. Spencer Dinwiddie won the skills challenge. A lot of similarities between these two, just in terms of their story and their kind of like out of nowhere rise. Drexler, who are you going with here?
You broke up again. I'm sorry. What was it again?
Sorry. It is Spencer Dinwiddie against Joe Harris.
Oh, this is a matchup. This one's tough. I think for me, I'm going to go Spencer. I think Spencer's kind of coming into a role that's more so than he's still going to be a role player. But right now, with the current state of the Nets with KD and Kyrie out, he's kind of got to be a leader and one of the best players on the team, and they're going to ask him to kind of lead the team in scoring, him and Karras, while Joe is still just defend, shoot some threes, take it to the rack here and there. So I think Spencer is going to take the edge here for me, but I wouldn't be upset if either of you guys put Joe Harris above Spence.
Josh, you taking Dinwiddie here?
Yes. He has the ceiling that Joe Harris doesn't. I mean, Joe Harris, at the end of the day, is a role player. He's a really good one. But Dinwiddie has shown that he can be kind of the lead ball handling guy on some teams that aren't absolutely terrible. So that's something. He's had so many great moments with the Nets, buzzer beaters. I just remember him carving up the Knicks last year. Obviously, the game against the Rockets where he led that comeback when they were down like 12 with a minute and a half left. So give me all the Dinwiddie dollars in this one. I'm taking him to go past Joe Harris and meet Brolo in the Final Four.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Dinwiddie also. I think for Joe, like you mentioned, Josh, I think he's kind of like the peak of what a role player can be, whereas with Dinwiddie, he can fill that role. He can come off the bench if he needs to, but he's also shown the ability to be the number one guy on a team and kind of lead them to the playoffs, which is what he was doing before Karis LeVert kind of made a push before the season was suspended and kind of made it more of a conversation as to who the more consistent, better option was this season. But yeah, just the ceiling that Dinwiddie has is just higher than Joe's simply because he's a guy who can create his own shot. And Joe Harris, you know, first in threes made for the Nets in the decade and among guys who played at least 100 games, he was first in 3-point percentage as well. Joe Harris also second in true shooting among those same guys who played 100 games behind just Jared Allen, who his shots are all dunks. So for Joe Harris to be in that conversation, you know, he was finishing at the rim at a very high level. Josh, I remember when you and Gavin did the podcast, it was like LeBron and then Joe Harris as the two guys who were like finishing at the rim with the greatest percentage. So obviously tremendous offensive player, scrappy rebounder, really tough, kind of like become one of the heartbeats of the Nets in this new era, this new decade. But yeah, Spencer, just because he can put up 30, 40 points a night if he needs to, and if he is hitting on all cylinders. So Dinwiddie will move on to the Final Four. Let's move to the 2-7 matchup. It is Deron Williams, who we keep talking about. He's primed to be upset, taking on D'Angelo Russell, the 7 seed. D'Lo made a lot of magic happen for Brooklyn last year. Drexler, does he pull off the upset here?
I think this is it. I think it's time. Maybe this is me letting my little bias come into play. I'll see what you guys think. But honestly, when I look back at who they were, I have way fonder memories with D'Angelo Russell than I do Deron Williams. So I think D-Will, while his tenure with the Nets was longer, I think just what they did for the organization. Also, you can even argue towards the end there with Deron Williams that D'Angelo was better than he was during his 2 years with the Nets. That I'm going to take D'Angelo, and D'Angelo kind of took the Nets from a terrible, terrible team that was like 25, 28 wins to a team that made the playoffs, and obviously what brought KD and Kyrie here. So I'm going to take D'Angelo Russell over Deron Williams, and I feel good about it.
Josh, do you agree?
Yes. I had Thaddeus Young beating D'Lo in the last round, so I clearly agree on D'Lo getting the nod here. Spoiler alert, on my actual bracket that I filled out, just me, I had Devin Harris making it all the way to the Final Four. So
whoa,
D'Lo Devin Harris matchup really was fateful. But yes, D'Lo getting the nod here.
I was saying that we had to find a way to not pit those two against each other in the first round.
That was
blame the committee.
I know. So I'll give the nod to D'Lo here. He'll advance just for me. Really exceeded expectations, while D'Will couldn't come close to matching them. And the season, as Drex mentioned, that D'Lo had last year was one of the reasons that was able to propel the Nets and eventually lead to them getting KD and Kyrie. Obviously, it was a disappointing season this year, but hopefully the KD-Kyrie experiment is able to bear some fruits in the coming years.
Yeah, and just to close the book on Deron Williams, I mentioned he kind of fell off a cliff his last 2 years with the Nets. In the 2013 playoffs, great, 20.5 points, 8.5 assists a game, about 40% from three. And even though they lost in seven games, he had 24, 7, and 6 in that game, 7, 0 turnovers, shot the ball well as well. So he played really well. But then 2014 playoffs, 14.5 and 6 assists, under 40% from the field. And in the Miami series, had an 0 for 9 game in there. And then 2015 as well in the Hawks series, game 2, 2 points, 1 for 7. Game 3, 3 points, 1 for 8. Game 5, 5 points, 2 for 8. Just didn't deliver on the back end of his Nets career as much as he did in the first half. And with D'Angelo Russell, it kind of reminds me a little bit of when like a great band will break up like at the peak of their powers, or when a TV show will go off the air when you feel like you still want like another season or two out of them. A lot of times those last season or two of a TV show or those later years of a band are like not as satisfying as that initial push. And I part of me wonders if D'Lo is helped by being sent off when he was, whereas like if they had kept him and if he had like underperformed in later years with the Nets, if that would have made those first couple years like not shine as bright as they do. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting, but yeah, I also have D'Lo moving on. Drexler, any last words here before we hit the last matchup of the Elite Eight?
I just feel like it's kind of accurate of Deron Williams' tenure with the Nets, like a two seed. He was brought here as a top 10 player in the league. Like he had a chance to win the whole thing. And then it's like, wow, this just turned out terribly.
The Deron Williams story. This turned out terribly. He is eliminated. The two seed falls D'Angelo Russell into the Final Four, where he will face the winner of our last Elite Eight matchup. It is the three seed Joe Johnson taking on the six seed Caris LeVert. Drexler, what are you thinking here?
I think I'm going to have to go ISO Joe. I think, again, I said it in the last round, if we do a 2020s bracket, I think Caris LeVert has the chance to be in Brook Lopez's shoes of this 2010s bracket here. So, but I think for the 2010s, I've got to pick Joe Johnson over Caris.
Yeah, Josh, I'm assuming you agree here.
Yeah, I do. You know, I think that like Caris, talent's there, but the body of work isn't. And I mean, Joe, he just like when the Nets got him from Atlanta, he didn't even have a reputation as one of the clutchest players in the league. And like the run that he was able to go on with all those last second shots was like truly astounding. And he just has that resume that Caris doesn't. Obviously, they came to the Nets at different points in their careers. Joe is kind of a tenured star player who kind of aged out, and then Caris drafted into the team and is trying to ascend. So who knows who will have a better career? I'd say probably Joe Johnson, given that he was a seven-time All-Star. But on the Nets, I have to go with Joe as well for some of his clutch shot making and helping change the culture a little bit of the Nets team.
Yeah, and just on LeVert, before we move on to the Final Four, He played 71 games in the 17-18 season, and then in these last two games he played, or excuse me, in these last two seasons he played 70 combined games. Would have been more if not for the suspended season, but even still, that shows just how much time he has missed these last 2 years. That being said, he has improved 8 points per game his first year, then 12, then 13.5, and then was averaging 17.5 this season. So he's definitely getting better. It's just a matter of him staying on the court. That 51 points and that triple-double were so tantalizing, so hopefully we get more of that once NBA basketball is back. But for now, we are on to the Final Four. We've got Brook Lopez, Joe Johnson, Spencer Dinwiddie, and D'Angelo Russell as our Final Four in this best net of the 2010s bracket.
So that's going to do it for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We finally have our Final Four in this bracket. All will be concluded in tomorrow's episode. We will finally crown a winner. We'll have a great celebration, I'm sure, on tomorrow's podcast. In the meantime, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. I'm at Marcus Barahal. Josh is at JMBass_. And if you want even more content before our next episode, all you have to do is tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen. Until next time, be well. Bye.